Parts of the story with Yosef and his revealing his identity to his brothers is what seems to be the Chumash describing Yosef losing self-control, which is remarkable. Because if you had to like paint a picture of someone who has enormous self-control, it's going to be Yosef. You know what the biggest, what I find at least, the biggest predictor of a person not being able to control himself and giving in to his worst taivas is when a person is lonely. When a person doesn't have like the sense of being part of something where there's a supportive chevro, there's you know people around him that set a certain. When a person is just very, very lonely, so people feel bad about themselves when they're lonely, and they tend to live down to their own expectations of themselves in moments like that. There was probably never a lonelier person in history than Yosef when he went down to Mitzrayim, and in the throes of that loneliness, this woman throws herself at him over and over and over again, and he withstands that kind of temptation, that kind of pressure. I mean, you talk about a person who's so in control of his own faculties. You know, like they say, like the old European mashkichim. You know that I think they say Rabbi Yeruchim, if he never turned his head, like if you would talk to him, he would like turn his whole body to face you because he has to. You know, he was so disciplined that he would never do something haphazardly or halfway. And if you turn your head, you're saying, I'm not really paying attention to you, I'm just kind of paying attention to you, make this quick. But, you know, like complete control of a person's own faculties. And then the Chumash itself tells us, V'lo yuchal Yosef l'sapek. He lost control. He couldn't contain himself anymore. The Ramban writes that he initially planned on a few more stages of the process to play out, to make his dreams come true and whatever, before he was going to reveal his identity, but he just couldn't hold it in anymore. So like, what happened? How does a person who's in control for so long, for decades, right? How does all of a sudden he loses control? So then he reveals his identity and he sends a message to his father through a symbolism of agalos. And the psukim clearly say that it was a single detail, that this was a single detail of what must have been a very long message. Vayagidu lo lemar od Yosef chai, v'chu mochshav l'chartes chayim, the brothers probably told Yaakov everything, like the whole story. He went to the Egyptian jail and he rose to power, and they probably told him everything. And he still didn't believe them. And then he sees the agalos. And then he felt better about it. Now, with all the details that they gave him, it must have been obvious that Yosef was really alive, especially with 11 siblings who, you know, had undoubtedly confirmed the identity of this man. As their brother, you know, these are not known to be, lightweights that are testifying to his existence and aliveness, why is it only the agalos that convinces Yaakov that Yosef is alive? So there seems to be one overarching message, rather, of the Parsha of Egla Rufa, and that is the notion of a Jew taking responsibility for other people, a sense of arvus. Right, that's what Egla Rufa is. The Ziknei Ir, the Shoftim, the Sanhedrin go out and they beg forgiveness, even though Yadeinu lo shafkas adam hazeh, they didn't really do it. We may not have killed this man, we may not have known this guy, he's a complete stranger, but in some sense we're all responsible and we recognize that sense of responsibility. I remember when I first got married, my wife and I went to Eretz Yisrael, and at the time my father-in-law was doing a lot of work for a British telecom company. So he had a lot of miles on British Airways. So he sent us to Israel on British Airways, and the deal was you got to stop in England. So, okay, once we're stopping in England, we spent Shabbos in England. It was a fascinating Shabbos. We davened at the Marble Arch Synagogue. We heard Rabbi Jonathan Sachs give a drasha. It was all about the Prince of Egypt, the movie that Spielberg made about it. It was fascinating. Why am I mentioning this? So when we were there, my father-in-law said, you have to go see this play. I'm totally not going to see this play, but yeah, tell me why I have to see this play. So he said, there's this play, and he told me, I forgot the name of it already, he said, there's no music, there's no singing, he said, it's just an amazing musr shmuz. He said, it was the best musr I've ever gotten. He's not a big musr learner, but he said, it was the best musr I ever got. And he said, the idea of the play was that at the beginning, in the first act, a young person dies or commits suicide. And, you know, and it's unexplained, and it's nobody's fault. And they can't, like, no one mistreated this person. And then through each subsequent scene in the play, it becomes everybody's fault. Like, you realize, well, I really could have done this better and treated them and spoke more nicely. You know, and ultimately, you see how every interaction had some sort of impact on the person, and it became everybody's fault. I'm sure Yonatan will send us which play it was. But I don't remember the name of the play. Now, the concept of Arvus, the concept of Hagla Rufa is that I take responsibility even though ostensibly in Act 1 it doesn't look like it was my fault. It doesn't look like I had anything to do with this. But we're members of Klal Yisrael, we're leaders in Klal Yisrael, and we therefore need kapara for it. Ramnitz and Alper points out that seems to have been the singular defining midah of Yosef HaTzadik, is willingness to take responsibility. When Yosef sees his brothers being mezalzel in the cupboard of the Bnei HaShvachos, he could have easily joined with the cool kids and made fun of the Bnei HaShvachos himself, and he would have gained acceptance in the crowd, but that's not what he did. Rashi and Chumash tells us, Taichus the Pesukim, that he went back and told his father, this is not right what they're doing to the Bnei. He was the only one defending the Bnei HaShvachos, so much so that the Ramban raises the kasha that how is it possible that the Bnei HaShvachos allowed Yosef to be sold down and to be thrown into a pit, sold down to himself. How did they allow it? I understand Binyamin didn't participate, Reuven didn't, some degree didn't participate. How did the Bnei HaShvachos participate? Well, how do you stab someone in the back like that? But the reason the kasha is such a strong kasha is because he was always defending. He was the only one defending them. When everyone else was bullying, he was standing up to them because he knows that the result will be Vayasifu Otsnoh. So he knows they're going to hate him more for it, but he had a sense of achrayus for his brothers. When Yaakov informs Yosef that his brothers are shepherding in Shechem and he sends him to look after them, his response is an immediate, Hineni, I'm ready to go. He knows that his brothers hate him. He knows that he's putting his life in danger. But I have a sense of responsibility to look after them. Great Jewish leaders in general are, or at least shouldn't be, interested in their own kavod, in their own self-aggrandizement. We do what's best for the tzibur. They should do what's best for the tzibur, and that's the way they live. The story is told, the Chafetz Chaim was riding on a train. He was always on trains for some reason. So he was riding on a train toward the end of his life, and he was very old and weak. He was very feeble at that time. And in one of the cities that the train stopped, large crowds of Yidden came to get a glimpse of the famous tzaddik. So the Chafetz Chaim wouldn't leave the train. He wouldn't get out. So people on the train said, you know, come out. They want to sing, you know, like they want to make a whole matzav, you know, they're going to, it'll be MKY, you know, like it's going to be a shmak. So he said, MK what? You know, like he's like, no, he said, my entire life, I ran away from kavod. That's all I did my entire life. And now that I'm old and weak, I have no interest in seeking kavod. They say when Rav Steinman came to America, when he was old and he felt that he couldn't do much other than give chizik. So he was like 102 or something. So his wife said, how did it go? And he said, they were feeding me chazer treif the whole time. So she said, really? He's like, no, not really, but they were giving me kavod, chazer treif. So Chafetz Chaim said, this is not what I do. And you know, it made him so uncomfortable. There was no part of him that wanted that attention, that wanted that kavod. But the Rav who was sitting next to him said, by not going out, you're going to be mitzayer, hundreds of yidden who came to see you. So then he went out. There are hundreds of yidden, they came to see me. So I could hate it, but ultimately, I work for them. So after hearing about everything that had happened to Yosef, and especially after hearing how Yosef rose to the throne and was in a position to contact his family, another kasha that Rabbi asked, like, why didn't he, you know, send a letter? And he hadn't contacted them, so Yaakov was nervous. He knew Yosef was alive. He just wasn't sure if it was Yosef anymore. He didn't believe it was the same Yosef who represented the values of Egla Rufa, who always took achrayus for other people, who always cared about what other people were thinking, what other people were feeling. How did he not reach out to me? And only when he saw the Agalos did he realize that there must be an explanation. But Yosef says the message, my first thought when I wake up in the morning, last thought when I go to sleep at night, is still a sense of achrayus for other people. Pasuk says that only when Vaydabre Levis called the Yosef Shadibra Alehem, and he also saw the Agalos, Vatchi Ruach Yaakov Aviyah. Initially, they told him, Ki Humo Shal B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, but that didn't make him feel better. He rules over Mitzrayim, yeah, good, he rules over Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is a place of Shtufe Zima, so that's his Malchus, Shkaya. The exact opposite of what I raised him for. Right? Shtuvizim means self-indulgence. It's all about me. It's all about getting whatever pleasure I can get. And then they started repeating the conversation. And how Yosef described, Ki l'michya shlachani elokim lefneichem, that I was put here to provide for others. Hashem sent me here to take care of you, to take care of everybody else. I had this mission to fulfill. And then Yaakov sees that confirmed with the Agalos. Now I get it. That he still has, you know, that I once heard, I think maybe from Yosef Nechem Kornitzer, the name of Yosef Nechem Kornitzer, maybe someone else, that, you know, it's amazing that Paro gives Yosef the job. Yosef comes out, he interprets dreams. So Paro says, oh, you're so good at interpreting dreams. You should be king. And he could say, so, you know, dream interpreter knows how to run a government? Like, why should he be, meaning, what does one skill have to do with the other? So someone explained that every other interpretation, Rashi quotes, all the Paro's going to have seven daughters and then they're going to die. Paro, you know, all the other interpretations were about what was going to happen in Paro's life. Yosef is the only dream interpreter that realized if a melech is having a dream, it's not about the melech. It's about the country. It's about the people. A melech doesn't have a dream about the melech. Paro says, if you understand that, then you're ready for malchus. At a friend of mine, Shevra Brachos, 25 years ago, I think it was at Rabbi Arya Natari Yudin's Shevra Brachos, Charlie Harari spoke, and he said, Chasen Doma Lemelech. I said, why is Chasen Doma Lemelech? Because the Melech knows it's not about you, but it's about somebody else. Right, you hear Chasen? Right? He knows that it's that when he puts his head on the pillow at night, what he's thinking about is somebody else before he thinks about himself. So that's perhaps why Yosef, the master of self-control, that's where he lost it. At the moment that Yehuda approached him, when he sees his brother standing up for the other brothers, when he sees that midah, that's where he loses it. That's where I can't control myself anymore. I see that my family is finally demonstrating the midah that I sacrificed my entire life for. And now they have it too. Now we're ready to reunite. That's where I need to be reunited. The Jewish people have a very strong tradition of arvus, of feeling a sense of responsibility for each other, recognizing that the tzibur is ultimately much more important than any individual. Under Rabbi Akiva Eiger's Matseva, it says, Eved li avdei Hashem. That's the epitaph on his Matseva. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, Gon Adir, I would have said, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, I don't know, Raya to the idea that of Yerida Sadonos, you know, like the fact that there's no one that could be Rabbi Kiveger, you know, like you open the Chuvah, if you don't believe in Yerida Sadonos, open the Chuvah Rabbi Kiveger, it'll take you 5 minutes to believe in that there's no Rabbi Kivegers walking around anymore. Go Nadir, Eved Le'avdei Hashem. That's ultimately what Jewish leadership is about. Our greatest leaders were all shepherds, because a shepherd is not, think about what a shepherd's relationship to the sheep is, right? That's supposed to be a metaphor of leadership. Do the sheep like think during the day like, oh, our shepherd, he's such a hero. You know, he's so cool. He's like, he's so inspiring. He's like, no, he gets them where they need to go. They don't have any like, they don't feel that their shepherd is an inspiration or a source of admiration. From the leader's perspective, he should not see himself as an inspiration or a source of admiration. He's there to shepherd the people to where they need to go. And that's the midah of Yosef HaTzadik, the midah that that ultimately really ends up being the most admired midah that we see in our leaders. And, you know, obviously we see it in our Gedolim, in our Rosh Yeshiva. But that's something to learn from Yosef HaTzadik.